This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Today we're going to be talking about what's going on. There's a lot of geopolitical issues that are going on. So much is happening, whether it be the Occupy Wall Street, the things that's happening in Libya, recent assassination plots by Iran for a Saudi Arabian diplomat, things that's going on in Mexico right now. There's so many issues that's happening right now in the world on Fed Access. We're going to kind of maybe just take a look at them. And what are the implications to U.S. national security? What are the implications to international security? What are the implications to the world? Have on the phone with me Vice President of Intelligence for Stratfor. Stratfor is a geopolitical intelligence gathering company. They do a lot of risk analysis, a lot of intelligence gathering that goes out to private sector companies as well as governments and everything else. Vice President of Intelligence, Fred Burton, is on the line with me. Fred, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me on, Derek.
Fred, talk to us about what's going on in terms of, you know, there's so many different issues. And maybe the one thing I want to talk about first, because it's, you know, we're seeing these movements happen across not only the United States and New York and Oakland and other things, but this Occupy Wall Street or kind of this Occupy movement, was the 99 percenters. We just saw this recent situation in Oakland where some people got hurt. A veteran was hurt. We're also seeing things in London and everything else. Is there some implications to, you know, security, economic security, homeland security? I mean, is anything that we should be concerned about where this movement may be going?
I think when you look at these kinds of events and at the scope of the demonstrations, Derek, one of the tremendous ramifications of this is just the public safety aspect that comes into play. The EMS response that has to be queued up ahead of time, the cost to the taxpayers of those kinds of services, the contingency plans that are put in place from all around the world, literally, where these events are occurring. And then, of course, some have had more hot spots of violence, such as New York and London and others. But there is a cause and effect of this that has a ramification to the public safety sectors. And then if you look at it in context of some of the large financial institutions that have been targeted with some of their activities, there is cost of trying to protect those buildings and just the free flow of employees coming in and out of a building and shutdown of operations. I know from some of our financial clients that anytime they get intelligence that there's going to be a demonstration, for example, they have to convene meetings, they have to put together contingency plans, they have to have plans in place for notifications of employees. They have to have extra security officers on staff. So as this continues to drag out, there is some economic ramifications to all this.
Are you hearing from, and I know you deal a lot of different clients on a lot of different levels, are you hearing a level of concern about maybe the longevity of this, about where this may be going, not being pro or anti-movement on this, but just kind of thinking about it in a very rational sense? Are you hearing some concerns about where this may be going and how to deal with it long-term?
Not from a strategic perspective, but very much so from a tactical perspective, meaning trying to get accurate information as to where these events are going to occur, the numbers of demonstrators, their planned activities, what they're going to do, and then doing that contingency planning to make sure that their employees that work in some of these locations, which can have thousands of employees, are not impeded, parking garages are not affected and things like that. So.
Right.
Most of the issues that we're hearing are directly a result from security ramifications at a tactical level as to, how are we going to keep business running, smooth commerce without a disruption, due to the demonstrations that are taking place.
Is this more of a possible, as we think about tactics, is this more of a situation that it may have to be a scenario where private sector has to engage, these protesters in order to begin kind of maybe dwindling this down to kind of say, hey, listen, and because I don't know. I mean, I don't know where the negotiation point is because, you know, what can change? I mean, you know, you have a protest and people want immediate change, but immediate change may not be possible. Is there anything about that being discussed?
Yes. In fact, it's not unusual for, your large multinational corporations, your Fortune 500s to directly engage groups such as this or NGOs on any kind of issue. But I'm not aware of any directly occurring that at least we are doing any work for.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do know that, companies routinely do this on issues when it starts becoming a significant business disruption or supply chain issue or impeding, your workforce kind of issue, because the ramifications of that then are internal where, the employees start complaining to HR, to legal, why isn't something being done?
Right.
It's difficult coming to work today, or I'm staying home today because
I'm afraid
it's going to be a protest.
Yeah. And you mentioned something, too, about kind of the dynamic of being tactical, because I know, when you used to work at State Department, working at Diplomatic Security Service, I mean, you kind of dealt with a lot of protection issues as well. But, we've got an age right now where we got these flash mobs. We got an age where people can sync up and then and all of a sudden appear out of nowhere, because they're using either Twitter or they're using, text messaging or whatever the case is. I mean, is that a major concern about just the quickness in which this is happening and the quickness in which the situation can turn from just being peaceful to maybe not being peaceful?
Well, of course. I think the the ramifications of any kind of mob is ultimately the concern. If you think of it in context of like the Arab Spring protests,
mm-hmm.
or one of the primary reasons our United States ambassador to Syria departed post was fear of mob violence, flash mob violence. And if you put it in context back here in the United States, the difference being is this: we do control the geography here. The D.C. police, the New York City Police Department. They can muster the forces and do a pretty good job of public safety and riot control. But that's okay if you have intelligence, you know it's going to happen. But as hundreds of people start, reporting to certain areas for protest, there's a call-up factor and there's a time delay to get the cops in play ahead of time.
Right. Moving forward to Libya, I mean, we just had the dynamic of Gaddafi just being killed, and that even I think yesterday they just signed off that military action will cease to exist now. So it seems as if the war there is over, all military action there is over. What are the implications? We've had this freedom. They had this freedom movement, but then now we're hearing about Sharia law being implemented and certain things. I mean, what's the implications of Libya as this thing is going forward? What are you guys seeing?
Well, we see a very, very murky and cloudy situation on the ground. Even when we talk to our contacts in country and on the ground and some of our analysts that are covering this in country, the verdict's still out. There's going to be a heck of a lot of jockeying for power. I don't think the United States government knows which wagon to hook on to what horse at this point in time. The dynamics are extraordinarily fluid. On a personal level for me with Gaddafi, with his direct involvement with the bombing of Pan Am 103, which killed our agents, and the attacks on our diplomats in Khartoum and Sana'a that he was directly responsible for, I'm certainly glad to see justice finally served in some format. I'm a bit disappointed at the U.S. government in not making a more valiant effort to bring the Pan Am 103 bomber El Megrahi back to the United States to stand trial for the bombing of Pan Am 103.
Yeah.
This was the individual that allegedly was dying from cancer, and the Brits and the Scots let him back in country, and he received the hero's welcome and greeted by Gaddafi and so forth.
Right.
So I think there's a tremendous amount of dynamics that are in play right now, Derek, that nobody really has a handle on.
You know, we're going to take a quick break. I want to keep on going on with the Libyan situation because I think, you know, this is really kind of telling about a lot of the things that's going on in that whole region, about this uncertainty that's happening in kind of the Middle East and North African areas about, you know, where are we going? I mean, what is going to be our national security policy in those regions? We'll talk about that a little bit more. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence for Stratfor. You can find Stratfor at stratfor.com. It's a geopolitical risk analysis and intelligence gathering company that does a lot of analysis for companies, governments, and everyone else, and has a good handle on what's going on in the world. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, that's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. A close call in the car. Scary movies, a first kiss. There are lots of things that can get the heart racing, and 99% of the time, it's an appropriate response to some type of stress or stimulation. But
with this sinus node reentry, the person is sitting comfortably with a heart rate in the normal 60 to 70 range and suddenly has a jump in their heart rate to 160 or 180.
The result, explains Mayo Clinic Dr. Stephen Hamill, of some misbehaving cells in something called the sinus node, which is a
structure that's about the size of a thumbnail, and it's the heart's pacemaker.
Now, it's very rare, but for patients who are affected, a procedure called ablation will destroy the cells that are misbehaving and save the racing for romances and roller coasters. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, October 30th, we'll be talking to Giada De Laurentiis. She'll be in the house with Mike Isabella and Lori Forster. We'll be talking about the Metropolitan Cooking and Entertaining Show.
Giada De Laurentiis, all right, that's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
Have you been in government contracting, procurement, or acquisition for 30 years? NCMA has. Join the National Contract Management Association for the 30th Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 14th and 15th in Bethesda, Maryland. The conference draws more than 1,000 government contract management professionals. Hear from respected speakers such as Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary, Department of Veterans Affairs, Martha Johnson, Administrator, GSA, and Shay Assad, Director, Defense Pricing, DOD. Learn more at ncmahq.org today.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're talking about today, we're talking about the geopolitical issues that are going on in the world. There's a lot of national security and international security threats that are happening right now. And I have with me Fred Burton. He's the Vice President for Intelligence for Strat4. And you can find Strat4 at strat4.com. They do a lot of heavy analysis on what's happening around the world in terms of political, national security, and international security threats that have an impact on all of us. Fred, we were talking about Libya and the change over of government and everything else, and it being a very, very murky situation. When we're looking at this, and I know it's hard to predict on where we're going, what are we seeing in terms of the leadership? I mean, are we seeing a leadership that's going to be a lot more democratic, or are we seeing a leadership that's going to possibly not be as democratic as we thought they were going to be?
Well, I think there's a tremendous concern that the Islamists are potentially going to somehow get themselves into power. I know we've seen some reports out of Sharia law being one thing being discussed as perhaps the standard for the new Libyan government. I think on a positive nature, Derek, and I was just chatting with a gentleman yesterday that's in country that was very actively involved with dealing with some of the opposition members and so forth. There is so much chaos and, for lack of better words, dysfunction that's underway. I think it's really too preliminary to say that that's going to become the standard that any of the Islamists are going to perhaps position themselves to get into power. But I think if you look at it from just a long-term strategic perspective, that certainly would be one of my fears if I was back at Foggy Bottom or sitting around the White House.
Sure. Do you think, and you've been, you know, in State Department, you've been in those meetings and kind of thought about things strategically, and you're thinking about them right now as well. Are we on the ground, and maybe giving people a kind of a perspective on this, you know, are we on the ground in terms of State Department and maybe CIA and other agencies? Are we on the ground trying to influence, you know, who the party may, you know, who's going to be in power? Are we, you know, there, even though it may not be talked about, are we there trying to make sure that it doesn't go back to a situation where we have to have sanctions against Libya and all this other kind of stuff, and this will be a country that we can work with?
Well, no doubt. We are, you know, hoping and trying to shape to some degree the outcome, but I think if you flip the equation, at least from some of the contacts that we have within the opposition community that toppled Gaddafi, there's great fear in country for the U.S. Propping up another Karzai, you know, what's deemed to be a U.S. puppet that's placed in charge. And
so our work in Afghanistan and our work in possible Iraq is now sometimes it's haunting us right now, possibly.
Absolutely, and I think at least from the individuals that we're talking to in country, they very much do not want to see that happen.
So are we going to see possibly a pushback against, you know, even though this was kind of a NATO alliance and you know, the NATO alliance helped the transitional government, are we going to see a pushback against maybe Western influence possibly because of this?
I think that's highly probable. That we'll see a large measure of concern in that direction, which I think is one of the very careful balancing acts that we have to try to choreograph either overtly or behind the scenes or with some of our allies to try to get our arms around, you know, what is going to be the next Libyan government, how is it going to look like, and what are the ramifications to us as a nation. And the other factor to play here is, almost from an intelligence perspective, one of the bigger concerns is who is going to be the pick of the litter, or who's going to rise to the top within the security and intelligence services within the government. And if we can reach out and help or maintain a very positive relationship with that person, whoever that person may be, that perhaps would bode us well long term. And then as you look to it, Libya, Derek, one of the fears is, you know, who's actually got control over the weapons, the surface-to-air missiles, the land pads. You know, do we have a good handle on all those? Have some of them made their way into Egypt, perhaps, to be used against Israel? You know, who's got the inventory? Who's got their finger on that kind of pulse?
And I guess even with these weapons, because like as you mentioned, you know, whether it be surface-to-air missiles or other kind of missiles, you know, it not only Egypt, but possibly these missile systems or any kind of weapons getting into the hands of possible terrorists in other parts of Africa or the Middle East. I mean, and one thing I want to kind of get your perspective on, Fred, is, you know, one thing I see the U.S. moving a lot more into Africa. I mean, I just read an article about the Air Force now operating out of Ethiopia and doing, you know, drone strikes. You know, we've seen the president send some Green Berets in the part of Africa to deal with the Lord resistance movement. You know, where are we headed with that? Are we going into a new national security pattern in other parts of the world now?
Well, I think we almost have to. We have to be nimble enough to be able to step on those fire ant mounds, so to speak, when we see them start to crop up. And as you look at some of the emerging threats, whether it be from, you know, a Somali terrorist group like al-Shabaab to the flight of al-Qaeda or grassroots al-Qaeda, you know, pretty much the path of least resistance at times could be in, you know, in Africa or the Horn of Africa. So, in essence, I think you're looking at, you know, special forces missions and CIA clandestine services missions. You know, will be the future over the next 3 to 5 years as we attempt to hunt down and go after some of these emerging terrorist groups.
Do you think, I mean, given from your perspective and maybe looking at it from, you know, you've been on both sides of the coin, looking at it from a State Department perspective and dealing with counterterrorism at State Department when you were there, and now looking at it from the perspective where you look at it from both the private sector and the government and all sectors, do you think that's the right, is that momentum the right way to go in which we're headed with more of a special operations, low intensity conflict scenario?
Very much so, I do, because if you look at the peaks and valleys and just the roller coaster ride of counterterrorism operations that when I first started in the early 80s, and when you would hit this bottom of that rail and have absolutely no money, no resources to do anything from protecting civil aviation to protecting U.S. embassy structures. I think one thing we've been very successful doing, the Bush and Obama administration, is trying to stay ahead of the curve so groups like al-Qaeda are not capable of conducting a strategic strike on U.S. soil again. And you know, I'm not saying they can't kill, you know, your Major Hassan at Fort Hood kind of scenario is pretty simple to pull off. You know, a man with a gun can kill a lot of people.
That so-called lone wolf scenario.
Exactly. But, you know, that man with a gun, you know, can't pull off a strategic strike on U.S. soil, and complete fairness to the FBI in this arena. You know, they've done a darn good job at neutralizing that kind of threat on U.S. soil. You know, you could certainly argue that, you know, taking the fight to the enemy overseas is a lot better strategy than allowing these individuals to, you know, infiltrate back into the United States where they could put together a strategic strike on the U.S.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, these Americans and you know, some of these people are, you know, have that dual citizen, or they have been Americans who have gone over to al-Qaeda and other things like that. But, I mean, at a certain point, if they have decided to act treasonous to the country, then, I mean, that's part of the nature of the beast, wouldn't you say?
I would. Very much so.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about Iran and find out what's going on in terms of how Stratfor is looking at this, a major scenario with Iran. And Iran is becoming a more and more of a concern. But this situation with this assassination plot against a Saudi Arabian diplomat, we'll talk about that with Fred Burton. He's the vice president of intelligence for Stratfor. You can find it on Stratfor.com. They do a lot of heavy analysis of things going on around the world. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio 15. 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
This week's Experts in Health topic is diabetes prevention, featuring Dr. Karen Dodge with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group at the Kaiser Permanente Severna Park Medical Center.
Diabetes is a rapidly growing health problem estimated to affect more than 8% of our population. It refers to a problem with the body's ability to make or use insulin. Prevention should be a priority, especially for those who are overweight or have a family history of diabetes. Simple and easy lifestyle changes have an enormous impact and can improve quality of life for people already living with the disease. Increase your physical activity. Benefits include weight loss, lower blood sugar, and boosting the body's sensitivity to insulin. Fit more fiber into your diet, such as fruits, vegetables, beans, and nuts. These foods lower your risk of heart disease, promote weight loss, and help to control blood sugar levels. Kaiser Permanente believes prevention is the best prescription for a happy, healthy life. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs thinks it can squeeze around $50 million from its technology budget by using hardware and software more efficiently. VA is launching what it calls its Ruthless Reduction Project. For example, employees will be given a choice of a laptop or a desktop computer, not both. VA will get rid of printers at individual employee desks and move to multifunction devices, and they'll implement more server virtualization to cut down on the physical IT infrastructure they have to operate.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Taking a family of five to the amusement park can cost a small fortune.
Oh, yeah. So to save some money, we thought, hey, let's bring the amusement park to us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. Step right up, young man. Are you ready to ride the Wacky Waterfall?
That's just the bathtub with the shower head running.
Nope, it's the Wacky Waterfall.
It's a shower, Dad.
Waterfall.
Wacky.
There's an easier way to save. Get online. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
In the midst of the debate over unmanned drones, a computer scientist says robots might actually be programmed with ethics to save lives. We can engineer robots to be stronger than us, go places we can't, sense and process information more quickly. And Ron Arkin of Georgia Tech says,
robots can ultimately be more humane than human beings in military situations.
He says they can be programmed to strictly follow the laws of war and rules of engagement, and they won't act out of fear or frustration.
Robots, or unmanned systems for that matter, have no inherent right of self-defense. They don't have to shoot first and ask questions later.
And Arkin says they can mimic guilt, adjusting future actions based upon battle damage assessment data. But he admits these ideas are controversial and so far have only been tested in lab simulations. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Derek T. Dorch on Fed Access. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence, and he's also a former Deputy Director of Counterterrorism at Department of State, dealing with a lot of different issues around the world. He works at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. Fred, we were talking about kind of Africa and talking about other things going on in Libya, but I want to turn our attention to Iran. You know, this was a really serious allegation about an assassination plot. I mean, how one, you know, and two things, Fred, how real is that? You know, and then also because you've dealt with assassinations on American soil, you know, one of your books talked about that. How real is an assassination plot? And then, you know, how bold is that Iran to do something on American soil like this?
Well, first, Derek, it doesn't surprise me. I had one of my investigations was the Iranian exile that was gunned down and murdered in Bethesda, Maryland. Back in the day, and the killer fled to Iran, and he's still safe haven there. Then, if you fast forward before this recent plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the United States, the Iranians were planning to kill an Iranian dissident in Los Angeles on U.S. soil. They, in fact, reached out and hired a hitman. And that's gotten very little national media coverage at all. I think the Iranians, almost to some degree, view these kinds of attacks, these kinds of targeting, as you know, as a tool of foreign policy. But the scary part is they firmly believe that they can get away with it, and that to me is and rightfully so. I mean, I mean, what are the ramifications so far for? Their actions to go after the Saudi. I mean, economically, here at Stratfor, we just had one of our analysts that went into Iran and for a conference and was there on the ground for a good week. And he said the economy is very robust. You know, people are spending money. Restaurants were full.
They've got oil profits. And I mean, if it's not the U.S. buying oil, it's China. It's other countries who are buying oil.
Right. So, in essence, we, you know, the idea of sanctions, I think, sounds good, but in reality, it's not really causing any kind of economic disruption to the Iranian regime. So, but if you think about it in context, the plot at first sounds very, very bizarre, and some would say that it's hard to believe that it's true. But in reality, if you go back to September the 10th, 2001, the day before 9/11, and if I told you, Derek, that 19 hijackers with duct tape and box cutters could topple the World Trade Towers,
yeah,
and attack the Pentagon, would you believe it?
No, we would say that's something that's come out of a fictional book somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, I think in reality, you know, the FBI has the smoking gun regarding wire transfers of a lot of cash. You and I both know that when they put together those kinds of criminal complaints and the Department of Justice makes the FBI cross the T's and dot the I's, they've had to show prima facie evidence that, you know, the Quds Force was behind this. You know, I think it's a very serious matter. And in reality, you know, what are going to be the ramifications to Iran because of it?
You know, you mentioned that this is almost maybe becoming part of their policy, a policy of assassinations. I guess the question is, and maybe some people are asking, is what do they get out of this? I mean, you know, is it just that they don't want anyone, whether it be a dissident or, you know, whether it be the Saudi, you know, the Saudis or whoever the case is, they don't want anyone talking bad about them. They, you know, what's the benefit of them, you know, taking this kind of action of get somebody, whether it be Iranian or Saudi Arabian or whoever?
I think it's part of, in essence, their intelligence and security services methodology. I think that they very much view covert action, assassination as a tool to eliminate their enemies. I think if you look in context, you have this poor gentleman out in Los Angeles that just happens to be a very vocal dissident that they plan to kill. And then you look at, you know, the high-value target, in essence, with the Saudi ambassador, which would be certainly a difficult target set because he has very good protection. There's State Department agents. There's oversight of all of our diplomats and so forth. That would have been a little more difficult job.
And what they try to do, Fred, is try to make it seem as if it was kind of maybe either the cartels or some kind of random, you know, violence that wouldn't be tied back to them.
Exactly. And then if you think about, in general, the entire border chaos, which we were chatting about a little bit before we were on the air, you know, the use of going into Mexico as a third country operation, which the Iranians love to do. We saw that in the investigations we had in BA Argentina, when the Iranians were behind the bombing of the Israeli embassy, as well as the Jewish daycare building, that, you know, they can't operate with their official diplomats on U.S. soil because we keep a close handle on that. But they very much so can operate against the United States from Mexico or Canada.
Hmm.
And plan their operations accordingly, plan their intelligence collection accordingly. And related in that same time frame, Derek, I want to mention there was a Syrian agent that was also picked up and arrested by the FBI that happened in the same time period when the Iranian assassination plot was going down. It got very little coverage on media whatsoever, but and this was an individual that was actually went out and purchased a gun, and he was collecting intelligence on Syrian opposition members in the Washington, D.C. area specifically.
Well, yeah, I remember that. I mean, he was, you know, this guy was accused of espionage on our soil. You know, are we starting to see, and we know the game of espionage, I mean, it happens, but it seems to be a very, very active component of some of these nations, whether it be Iran, Syria, or other ones who are now beginning to target people, dissidents, or people who are speaking out against their country, or people who are trying to maybe foster freedom or something, or opposition to the government in their country. Should we be concerned that anyone who is now doing that is a possible target?
Well, I think if I was in their shoes from countries like Iran or Syria, I would certainly be fearful because of the very brazen nature of and brutal MO of their security services, and again their desire to come into the United States to carry out these operations, because we have such a free country, and you can, the freedom of speech issue and so forth, that you can come in here to the United States and say pretty much whatever you want.
Right.
But if you think about it from the standpoint of an intelligence service, you know, reaching out to target these individuals here in the United States is certainly very troubling to me, you know, having seen what happens when these plots do go down. And then in reality, the Iranians have killed people on U.S. soil before.
Right.
But
why doesn't it get any kind of a press, though, Fred? I mean, because, as we just mentioned, the Syria thing got very little press. We've got all these different situations that are happening, and you've seen the assassinations happen where it was carried out and people have been killed. And you've investigated those things, working for State Department and then on your own. Why doesn't this stuff, and I don't think even then that got a lot of press back then, Fred, on some of the investigations you dealt with. You know, why is this not given a lot more attention?
Well, I think for the most part, I think Washington inside the Beltway is a more unique environment, with folks that are abreast of international affairs and things that are happening around the world. But, you know, the farther you get away from the Beltway, the less people are concerned about these issues, whether it be terrorism or these kinds of plots. To be blunt, I think some of them, are so, at times when you look at them, surreal. When you think about it, it's hard to wrap your hands around this kind of activity.
People almost think it's like a movie. You see a movie and you think, oh, that can never happen. But in actuality, these things are actually going on around the country.
That's right. And the scope of intelligence collection on our soil from nation states, is concerning to the FBI. I know they try to do the best job they can. You know, the real concern there is, if you think about it from an espionage perspective, back in the day, in the Cold War days, you had the Soviets or the Russians, collecting intelligence for national security purposes, their national security purposes. You get countries like Iran or Syria that are state sponsors of terror that collect intelligence for the purposes of assassination. They're not collecting intelligence to go into some file or try to get a edge up on some military technology, although they do that too. The purposes of these folks collecting intelligence now is to kill people.
Hmm. Should we be concerned that what we have seen is just, you know, it's like an iceberg? What we have seen is just a tip, and there may be a lot more of this activity going on?
There is no doubt there's a lot more of this activity going on. If you look at this from a global perspective, I think that, again, and Secretary of State Clinton said this, that, you know, the U.S. intelligence community, specifically the DEA. The DEA are the unsung heroes in this case involving the Iranian plot. It was a DEA asset informant that was able to develop this plot. But DEA has a very aggressive intelligence collection effort, you know, directed on in Mexico and against cartel smuggling. So I'm not surprised, but, you know, they've gotten very little credit for their good work behind the scenes in neutralizing this plot.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence for Stratfor. You can find Stratfor on stratfor.com. They're a geopolitical and intelligence gathering private company that does analysis for governments as well as the private sector as well, but and also individuals can tap into their services. We're talking about all the geopolitical issues. We're going to talk about Mexico. There's some developing stuff that's happening in Mexico right now that Fred is going to chime us in on, and we'll talk about that and the implications of what's going on with the cartels and all the other madness that's going on in Mexico when we come back. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
As the single largest generator of jobs for the Department of Defense, Lockheed Martin's F-35 represents more than just innovation and freedom. It's an advanced technology program that fuels our nation's economic engine. As a leading-edge fighter, the F-35 has unprecedented capabilities that will help America and its allies defend freedom. And it's creating direct and indirect jobs for over 120,000 Americans and impacting more than 1,300 suppliers in 47 states across the U.S. Software developers in California, steel workers in Pennsylvania, and engineers in Georgia are all working to secure our skies. The F-35 Lightning II program. Securing freedom, securing jobs, securing America's future. To learn more, visit F-35.com.
So you blew it. You ate the donut. You slept in and skipped your workout. You had that second helping. Went a little overboard at the buffet. Hit the candy jar at the office a little too hard. You forgot to put safety first. You didn't eat your vegetables. You didn't even open that bottle of vitamins you bought. You accidentally left your gym bag at home. Your favorite machine was broken at the gym. Instead of your water bottle, you chugged a 2-liter of soda. You couldn't help yourself. You had a craving, or you simply couldn't resist. But you know what? It's okay. 2 steps forward and 1 step back is still 1 step forward. 1 slip-up isn't going to undo all that good work. So don't be afraid to embrace your setbacks and do whatever it takes to keep trying. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe the more you keep trying, the better chance you have to turn bad habits into good ones, because we think it's never too late to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview, and I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35% at www.excelgov.com.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about a lot of the geopolitical issues that's going on around the world. We're talking to Vice President of Intelligence for Stratfor, Fred Burton. You can find Stratfor at stratfor.com. Fred, we've been talking about Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Movement. We're talking about Libya. We've been talking about Iran. But, you know, there's a lot going on in Mexico that, given the state of everything that's happening right now and even, you know, our election cycle and everything else, that's not getting a lot of play and hasn't been getting a lot of play. You're following a issue that's happening right now in terms of the firefight. What's going on in Mexico right now?
Well, late in the night, last night, until current time here Friday morning, there's been a raging gun battle in Nuevo Laredo, right across the border from Laredo, where you can actually hear the gunfire from Laredo underway, where it looks like Mexican military has moved into the area and engaged one of the cartels in a shootout. And we're getting reports that perhaps a major cartel, high-value target, has either been wounded or killed in this. And again, you know, being here in Texas, from a geography perspective, it's something we're more attuned to. But if you think about it in context, Eric, this would be like standing along the Potomac and listening to raging gun battles in Arlington,
right,
or in Roslyn. And that's what you're hearing as you are standing on the border in Laredo. And you have large educational institutions like the University of Texas that has a huge building there that has actually taken incoming rounds in the past when these things break out. You have a flood of Mexican nationals, asylum seekers, people just trying to make their way to the United States when one of these things occurs. And this is the kind of issue that gets very little national media. And the farther you get away from the border, the less anyone appears to be aware of just the general violence and nature of what's occurring.
You know, I mean, Laredo and a lot of those border parts of Texas who are right on the border of Mexico, those places are almost a free zone in terms of drugs going in and out, tunnels being built to swing up into those cities, to swing into Texas. It just almost seems as if it's out of control, Fred. And I guess I wonder, you know, what can be done, or you know, because the local officials can't handle it. The sheriffs or the police. They don't have the resources to really contain this situation. What needs to be done to deal with this?
Well, first, I think, and in fairness to Governor Perry of the state of Texas, he's had for the past 2 years or so a standing request to the White House, DHS and DOD, for 3,000 National Guard assets, boots on the ground, just for Texas alone. That just shows you, just from a sheer geography perspective, you know, Texas is almost 1,400 miles in length and two time zones. And, you know, there's parts of the border that are not secure. When you hear that comment, what does that mean? Well, that means that, yes, there may be technologies such as cameras that are recording individuals coming to the United States, but there is no people to respond to the areas where the human traffickers are coming into the United States. And if you think of these cartels, and you have to put it in context, Derek, as a criminal enterprise, and underneath that umbrella, you have bulk cash flowing from the United States. You have stolen weapons. You have stolen cars. And then flowing north from Mexico into the United States in these very efficient supply chains, you have dope, crystal meth, heroin to a lesser degree. You have human trafficking, child prostitution, you know, young girls being, you know, sold into prostitution coming through these rings. The illegal alien immigration issue, which is, you know, certainly a very controversial issue regarding immigration. And so, and it's a constant flow. It's like a barn door, in and out, in and out, in and out. And then whenever you have these kinds of attacks at these very lucrative points of entry as you come to the United States, you know, think of arriving at an airport, your point of entry in the United States. That's what's occurring on the border at our large points of entry. On the Mexican side, that's a very lucrative cartel choke point that is not owned by the Mexican government. It's owned by a cartel. And if you're a rival cartel, you got to pay a tax to bring your dope or your people through.
And that's where these battles take place. They want to take that property.
That's right. It's all about geography. And then, you know, the Mexican military, you know, certainly has had some inroads and some successes, but they also are greatly challenged with corruption. And then we are greatly challenged with corruption on our side of the border. That's one of these hidden things that nobody really likes to talk about.
You know, and it seems to be coming, and I know a lot of agencies, and you know, just in people I've talked to, a lot more of the agencies, whether it be CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, Homeland Security, are now looking at the counter-narcotic and organized crime threat that's coming out of Mexico with a lot more serious eyes, and DEA has definitely been taking a look at this. But it still seems, I mean, do we need to put the same resources that we're putting into counterterrorism? And me and you were talking about this before we started the show, you know, whether it be drones. I mean, I know we have drones looking for people, but do we need to have drone strikes against cartels, you know, in Mexico? I mean, do we need to put the same, do we need to have special operations going, you know, to get some of these guys? Does the same resources need to go into this?
Well, the rub is this. The Mexican government do not want unilateral military operations on Mexican soil, meaning we could not do what we're doing in Waziristan in Mexico. The foreign policy ramifications of that with our border nation would never fly at Foggy Bottom. In my discussions on this issue, and I'm on the Border Security Council, which is a political appointment here, one of the constant things you see is that the Mexican government does not want a militarized border. They do not want a U.S. military, heavy U.S. military presence on the border. You know, there's an extraordinary amount of commerce that flows between our countries. But people do not understand around the nation the demographics and the culture between Mexico and the United States as you look at our border states. And it's extraordinarily political. It's challenging to try to deal with on a day-to-day level. But in reality, the federal government just simply does not have the resources in place to help the local or state officials in combating this problem.
Wow. Fred, we're going to have to leave it here. I wish we had another hour because we could go into a lot more detail about some of these issues. But as you know, I'm going to have you back, soon so we can keep on talking about things. People need to follow what's going on with the border and follow what's going on around the world. Fred Burton, he's a vice president for STRATFOR, former deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State. And you can find STRATFOR at stratfor.com. Fred, as usual, thank you so much for all of your insight.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.